The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
If we look to the answer as to why for so many years we achieved so much, prospered as no other people on earth, it was because here in this land we unleashed the energy and individual genius of man to a greater extent than has ever been done before. Those who say that we're in a time when there are no heroes, they just don't know where to look. The sloping hills of Arlington National Cemetery, with its row upon row of simple white markers bearing crosses or stars of David, they add up to only a tiny fraction of the price that has been paid for our freedom. As for the enemies of freedom, those who are potential adversaries, they will be reminded that peace is the highest aspiration of the American people. We will negotiate for it, sacrifice for it. We will not surrender for it now or ever. We are Americans.
Welcome to Always Right Radio with Bob France on AM 1420, The Answer.
It is indeed. Good morning. Thanks for being with us. Always Right Radio on AM 1420. The Answer at 7 minutes after the hour of 9 o'clock. We are ready to rock and or roll as the situation may require. It's a Thursday, 21st morning of the third month in the year of our Lord, 2024. Big show lined up coming up in half an hour. We're going to get new analysis of the Ohio primaries, not just the results, but also the turnout and what it looks like for Republicans in the state. Maybe it'll give us a bit of an idea of what will happen in November in terms of turnout. We're going to talk to Jim Renacci, former congressman, former gubernatorial candidate, leader of the Medina County GOP. That'll be at 9:35. At 10:10, Dr. Everett Piper joins us, as he does each and every Thursday, with commentary on the culture wars that we continue to engage in. And at 11:10, Brady Seymour is going to join us. He is from Turning Point USA. He is one of those responsible for bringing Kyle Rittenhouse next month to Kent State University. If you thought you knew what a clash looks like, wait until Kyle Rittenhouse, one of the most reviled Americans to the radical left, particularly the race baiters and racial arsonists, the ones who just cannot stand, and the anti-2A crowd. It's Kent State, for crying out loud. Kent State, Kyle Rittenhouse, can you say oil and water? How did they pull this off? Will it come off? And especially after a pretty tense situation happened when Kyle spoke at the University of Memphis yesterday, really, really wondering how this is going to work. Going to talk to Brady Seymour about it. By the way, I fully support it. And if I can, I will be there to support Kyle Rittenhouse, and I may ask a number of you to join me. We'll have to figure out how to get tickets and what it'll take, but I would absolutely love to be there to support this young man's message next month. So Jim Renacci, Everett Piper, Brady Seymour are the guests today, and obviously we want to hear from you at 216-901-0945. Now, before we get to our top stories of the day, let us pledge our allegiance to this glorious republic, the one that we are trying to save from self-destruction coming up this November. Patriots, stand, put your hand on your heart. If you are not a patriot, don't pretend. Just take a knee so that we can identify you as the Marxist dog that you are. For those of us who believe, however... And we got a little bit of a glitch here. I'm going to fix that.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Sometimes the best laid plans of mice and men and pledges and so forth, they often go awry. All right, friends, you know what we're doing now. We started this yesterday.
It's 9 o'clock. Do you know where your headlines are? We do. It's time for the Top 9 at 9 on Always Right Radio.
Top 9 news stories of the morning. We're going to let you know what we're talking about on the program today, what's on our mind, and then we'll compare to what's on yours.
Number 1.
President Joe Biden has issued a new environmental regulation. The goal to phase out gas-powered cars requires all American automakers to produce EVs as part of a sweeping green energy agenda. Yesterday, he announced the rule to require that the majority of the new cars sold in the U.S. be EVs or hybrids by 2032. The New York Times details it. Nearly 3 years in the making, the new tailpipe pollution limits from the EPA would transform the average American automobile into an illegal vehicle. A record 1.2 million EVs rolled off dealers' lots last year, but that made up just 7% of the total U.S. car sales, far from the 56% target under the new regulation. Biden said 3 years ago, we set an ambitious target that half of all new trucks and cars in 2030 would be zero-emission vehicles. Today, we've made historic progress. Now the goal is 67% by 2032. The regulation comes as a survey from Consumer Reports posted last year showed that you and I, American consumers, reported 80% more problems with our EVs than consumers with traditional gas-powered cars. But this is what they are doing to us.
Number 2.
Former President Trump's campaign fired back yesterday at Biden's finalized plan. Biden declared that the EPA regulations would destroy the automobile industry. Quote, Joe Biden's extreme electric vehicle mandate will force Americans to buy ultra-expensive cars they do not want and cannot afford while destroying the U.S. auto industry in the process. This radical policy, according to a Trump campaign spokesperson, is anti-job, anti-consumer, and anti-American. It will destroy the livelihoods of countless U.S. auto workers while sending the U.S. auto industry to China. President Trump will reverse Biden's extreme electric vehicle mandate on day one, he promised. He will protect the American freedom of Americans to drive whatever vehicle they choose and will enhance the tough tariffs on Chinese imported cars, saving the U.S. auto industry for generations to come. I'll tell you what, if you didn't already have enough reasons to vote for Trump and against Biden in November, that one alone should do it. Getting rid of that insane regulation and mandate on day one.
Number 3.
Number 3 is former Biden family business associate Tony Bobulinski begged Democrats on the Oversight Committee yesterday to focus on how China has infiltrated the highest office in America. I wish you would spend your time focusing on the fact that the Chinese Communist Party infiltrated the White House of the United States of America through the Biden family. I don't say that lightly. It's not a joke. I was willing to die for this country. Take the Biden name and the Biden family completely out of it. How did the Chinese Communist Party infiltrate the White House? Let's start there. Focus on those facts. What they did, how they did it, why they used money, why they used private enterprises instead of military, that is huge to our national security. Bobulinski, of course, was spot on. Let's go to
number 4.
Part of the show yesterday came in the form of Alexandria Damasio-Cortez. AOC, the former bartender, grilled Tony Bobulinski about exactly what crimes he says the president is guilty of. Bobulinski tried to tell her, but being the fact that she is more bartender than congresswoman, she couldn't understand it.
Did you witness the president commit a crime? Is it your testimony today?
Yes.
And what crime?
Corruption statutes, RICO, and conspiracy.
What is it? What is the crime?
I answered the question.
No.
RICO, you're obviously not familiar with.
RICO is not a crime. It is a category.
It is a category. Tony Bobulinski informed the baffled, bubble-headed bartender is a category of crimes. Racketeering is a crime, and that is exactly what he said he witnessed. So, yes, that is one of the representatives of Congress. Is she really one of the best 435 among us in this country? Well, here's another one.
Number five.
Not of Congress, but New York Attorney General Letitia James is pushing back on President Trump's request for a stay of his $464 million civil fraud judgment, arguing that his recent request was unreliable and procedurally improper based on a flawed premise. Quote, "There is nothing unusual about even billion-dollar judgments being bonded on appeal." Senior Assistant Solicitor General Dennis Phan said in a filing this morning that defendants objecting to a possible fire sale, if they were to sell assets to generate cash to use as collateral for a bond or as a deposit, but the alternative would be to shift the risk of executing on defendants' illiquid assets to OAG. What this means is, and Trump's lawyers argued earlier this week, that he is unable to secure a bond for the judgment, having been rejected by over 30 insurance companies due to the size and his need to post properties as collateral. And no insurance companies nor banks want to be the ones that bailed out Donald Trump. None of them want to suffer the rest of the ramifications and repercussions that would be imposed up on them by the Biden administration and the leftists in the banking and insurance communities. If Trump doesn't post a bond, James' office could begin the process of seizing his assets, including his major New York properties such as 40 Wall Street and Trump Tower. This is a disgrace. This is an assault on all things decent. And I don't care who the American citizen is. No one deserves to be treated like this. But there is a target on his back for reasons that have nothing to do with the valuation of his property. I think everybody knows that.
Number six.
The Biden administration, in all of its ignorance, failed to file paperwork causing 200,000 migrant deportation cases to be tossed. Biden's Department of Homeland Security failed to file the required paperwork before the court dates, according to a new report. The DHS's failure to file thousands of notices to appear before scheduled hearing dates left the courts without jurisdiction to handle deportation cases and to rule on asylum claims. These large numbers of dismissals and what then happens raise serious concerns, including the question of why? Because there is, quote, an almost total lack of transparency, end quote, as to why and where these DHS failures occurred. I think we know why they occurred. The Biden DHS, under the guidance of Alejandro Mayorkas, want nothing to do with deporting illegal aliens. The open borders are open for a reason. And now we see literal, intentional malfeasance in order to facilitate more of these individuals being able to stay.
Number seven.
U.S. District Judge Nancy Maldonado in Illinois was up before Senator John Kennedy yesterday. Not an enviable position for anybody to be, but especially if you are not a qualified nominee. She has been nominated by Joe Biden to take a seat at the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Seventh Circuit. And Senator John Kennedy asked her about one of the briefs that she wrote about assault weapons. Listen to how this one went.
Wrote the brief. Tell me what you meant by assault weapons.
Senator Kennedy, actually, I did not write the brief. The brief was written by...
You signed the brief, though, didn't you?
Correct. I signed the brief.
When you sign a brief, you're testifying to the court that everything in it is true, right?
Yes. Okay. That, and I...
So they're your words in terms of the court, right?
Well, you're correct, Senator Kennedy. Okay. I would never
Tell me what you meant by assault weapons.
So, I am not a gun expert.
This bubblehead wants to be a federal judge on a federal court of appeals. She wrote a brief or signed a brief that was written saying that we should ban assault weapons. She has no earthly idea what an assault weapon is. No idea. In fact, she declared, "I'm not a gun expert." Then why did you sign a brief saying you wanted to ban assault weapons? And the reason, of course, she cannot define assault weapons is because it is no such category of weapons. An assault weapon is something that someone uses to commit an assault. Whether it's a handgun, a six-shooter, or an AK-47, it can be an assault weapon. She is clueless, and Senator Kennedy is a national hero.
Number eight.
Google, the most dangerous company on the planet, I know that's saying a lot, but I've said it before and I'm standing by it. Google has quietly changed the definition of bloodbath on its search results. We all know why. Google has decided that President Trump's use of the word bloodbath, which of course has been debated all across the news circles and online in the past several days. On Sunday, March 17th, Google's definition of bloodbath was a ruthless slaughter of a great number of people, a massacre, informal, a period of disastrous loss or reversal. As example, a few mutual funds performed well in the general bloodbath of the stock market. But as of this morning, bloodbath, one definition, an event or situation in which many people are killed in a violent manner. Quote, he allowed the protest to go ahead despite warnings that it could spark a bloodbath. That's Google. They're in charge and in control, officially or unofficially, of all information, the flow of it to and from Americans. You don't look for things anymore, you Google them. You don't search for things anymore, you Google them. That's what Google is. They literally are the enemy of the people. And
number nine.
Speaking of the enemy of the people, the Georgia election interference charges, the latest lawfare, or one of the lawfare instances against President Trump. President Trump got a little bit of a minor victory. He has been given the go-ahead to appeal last week's ruling that allows Fani Willis to continue to lead the prosecution. In a short order on Wednesday, Judge Scott McAfee granted the defendant's request to appeal his Friday ruling to the Georgia Court of Appeals. On Monday, eight defendants, including President Trump, requested what is known as a certificate of immediate review over the ruling. In his Friday ruling, McAfee found that the defense lawyers failed to meet their burden proving that Willis acquired an actual conflict of interest in the case through her romantic relationship with Nathan Wade, the special prosecutor she hired for the case. So basically, McAfee knows that neither Willis nor Wade are qualified or capable of doing an impartial job of prosecuting that case. So he made the second in the case, Wade, leave, but said Fani Willis could stay. President Trump now has the right to appeal that. The problem is it's going to be the same types of judges as Scott McAfee. But at least he gets to move ahead with that one minor victory. There you go.
This has been the Top 9 at 9 on Always Right Radio. AM 1420, The Answer.
There you go. I want to try to run them all down for you every morning. Now, yesterday was the first day we did Top 9 at 9. We're going to do this every day to let you know what is on our minds, what is in our headlines, what is in the news, and what we can talk about. And again, we've got some great guests to talk about those things coming up this morning. So the phone lines will be open at 216-901-0945 or 888-281-1110. I want to hit number one there just for a moment or two, because this is what we have all been afraid of. They're going to try to force us. Let me rephrase. It's more than just forcing us into electric vehicles. This is handing. And I wrote this when I posted this yesterday when I found out about it on my social media. This is literally handing control of the U.S. automotive market, the automotive industry, to Xi Jinping. And it makes me wonder, what does he owe Xi Jinping? Talking about Joe Biden, what does he owe him? I'm feeling like Xi Jinping must have been given the task of picking Joe Biden's retirement home. And so because he's worried about where he's going to be put, he's got to go ahead and do favors for the guy. And I know that sounds silly, and of course it is silly. But so is this mandate, this massive new tailpipe emission federal regulation is going to force all of our vehicles off the road by 2030. We're not going to be able to buy another, a gas-powered vehicle. You're going to have to buy one of the Chinese-controlled vehicles that are going to be built in Mexico and brought up here. And as Donald Trump said in the now infamous bloodbath comment, unless he is president, that will be allowed to go forth. And the American automobile industry will be destroyed. And if President Trump is reelected, in this odd scenario, but President Trump, unless he is made the 47th president and puts a tariff on that and stops this and rolls back, as I said in one of the number two on the top 99, he said he will end that requirement in that federal regulation on day one. Unless he does that, there will be a bloodbath. And yes, of course, it is an economic bloodbath, which is what he meant when he said it, and the left knows it. But this is exactly how deranged these people are. Joe Biden is owned lock, stock, and barrel by the radical globalist extremists, including gangrene, the climate change slash global warming cabal that is aiming to essentially control all of the people by threatening them because of the threats that they say they pose to the planet. All right. So that's number one. But we've got nine different things to talk about. And, of course, we're going to talk about the election. The primary on Tuesday gave us Bernie Moreno as the Senate candidate to face Sherrod Brown. We're going to get the reaction on that and more of what we learned on Tuesday from Jim Renacci, the leader of the Medina County GOP, former congressman as well. So that conversation is coming up. Stay here. It's Always Right Radio on AM 1420.
Answer.
All right, it's 9:34. Thanks for being with us on AM 1420. The Answer, Dr. Everett Piper takes us through some of the culture wars next hour at the top of the hour. We're now joined by Jim Renacci, former congressman, former gubernatorial candidate, former Senate candidate, and leader of the Medina County GOP. Presided over a wonderful Lincoln Day dinner a few weeks back with Dennis Prager. Jim Renacci, good to talk to you again. How are you?
Good morning, Bob, and thank you for having me on.
Yeah, of course. So obviously everybody is reacting. Everybody has some sort of a feeling of how things went on Tuesday in our all-important primary. I was very, very happy to see a number of results at the state level in terms of our state house. And obviously, depending on your horse in the race for Senate, a lot of people are very happy right now. Bernie Moreno ran away with that one by double digits. He's got over 50% of the votes in a three-man race. If you are a supporter of one of the others, you're probably not as happy. So let's work our way through it. Let's start at the top. The Senate race, I think, was the most important one. Were you surprised by Bernie's margin of victory?
Well, first, Bob, I want to congratulate all the winners in the primary. And, of course, looking at polling, what's interesting, Bob, for me is I look back in 2022 when I ran and the expectations of the polling and then what happened and then the shock of realizing what really did happen. And I think we're seeing the same thing. Now, again, congratulations to Bernie and all the people that supported him. This is good for them. But I really do think we have to look at the votes and we have to look at what happened here. I've tried to tell people that when you have 130% turnout in a Republican primary and only 20% turnout statewide, something's wrong with the numbers. And what's really wrong here is that I don't know who they voted for, but clearly there were Democrats and independents that crossed over and got involved in that Republican primary and changed the numbers, which is why the polling was so far off in this cycle and also in 2022.
Excuse me. So, Jim, explain why you think that so many Dems crossed over, and why would Dems cross over to vote for the guy that was perceived to be the most conservative of the three in the race?
Well, first off, again, and I know a lot of the Bernie fans have gotten mad at me over the last couple of days, and this is not against Bernie. This was against the process. You know, when you only have approximately 850,000 Republican registered voters in Ohio, and you have 8 million registered voters in Ohio, then, and you get 1,100,000 Republican votes in a Republican primary, and you have only 20% of turnout in the state, let's look at those numbers, Bob. So let's assume that, and by the way, Democrats turned out at 55%. So let's give Republicans the same thing. Let's assume that 55% of Republicans turned out. Well, 55% of Republicans turned out, that'd be about 450,000 votes for Republicans. But we ended up with 1.1 million. So where'd the other 700,000 votes come from? Well, clearly, they came from unaffiliated crossing over and Democrats crossing over. And I think that's the problem with our Ohio primary being open. We don't really know who elected Bernie Moreno or anyone down ticket. What we do know is that he got the most votes, and congratulations to him and all the other winners. But if we're really going to have a Republican primary, the primary should be made up of Republican voters. Now, I will tell you the argument I've had over the last 24 hours. So you want to stop independents from voting? No. I think independents should vote. I think they vote in the general election. If they want to vote in a Republican primary, register to be a Republican. Well, you want to stop Democrats from voting? No, I don't want to stop Democrats from voting. They want to vote in a primary, vote in their primary. That's why they're a Democrat, vote in the Democrat primary. So the numbers just don't make sense, not only in 2024, but in 2022. And that's why I'm asking that your listeners, start talking about this. We need to close our primary. You may be happy with the winners, but there's going to be times you're not going to be happy with the winners when you have an open primary where Democrats cross over. One other thing I would tell you, you can go back. On Sunday, CNN reported that Chuck Schumer spent $3 million in Ohio in the last 5 days to try and bump up Bernie Moreno and get him elected. And the head of the Democratic Senate Committee also was on CNN saying, of course, we would like to see him win because he's the weakest of the three candidates. Now, that's not me speaking. That's the Democrats in Washington.
No, that's kind of you speaking. Let's be upfront. That's kind of you speaking because yeah. You just said that a lot of Bernie people have come after you over the course of the last two days since the election because you have been beating this point for a while now. You look, and by the way, I want to say the first thing. I agree with every word you said about open primaries. They should absolutely be closed. I don't know what it's going to take in the General Assembly to do something to pass that. I don't know exactly who would be responsible for proposing it and what it would take to get everybody to do it. But I agree with you. I do not like Democrats and independents voting in Republican primaries. And just like Rush used to say about Operation Chaos, I don't like Republicans voting in Democrat primaries either. I think you need to be a registered member of that party to cast a vote in a primary. So you and I are in lockstep on that one. Now, as it pertains to Bernie, I saw the buy too by Chuck Schumer, and I saw the commercials, and of course, they're essentially, it's kind of like reverse psychology, trying to say, he's in bed with Trump, he's got an America First agenda, he's too conservative for Ohio, which of course would make Trump supporters want to go and rally for him. So I get the reverse psychology of the spots, but I dispute this notion that he would be the easiest to beat, given the fact that, well, look what he actually did in the primary because of Trump. Trump is going to be on the ballot, too, and he has got literally a who's who of the most conservative voices in America championing his campaign. His fundraising between now and November is going to be massive when you've got Ted Cruz and Kristi Noem and Charlie Kirk and Jim Jordan and J.D. Vance and Donald Trump all supporting him. How do you think, Jim, that the Democrats think he would be easy to beat, given all of that massive conservative support?
Well, the question is going to be what happens between now and November. Look, when I won the primary 6 years ago, the National Republican Senatorial Committee required me to do a poll with them. It was $36,000. I paid $18,000. They paid $18,000. Mm-hmm. It came out and said that I was beating Sherrod Brown by 2 percentage points at that time. And yet, the National Senatorial Committee made a decision, even after that poll, not to come into Ohio. So here's the challenge.
Meaning not to spend money in Ohio, right? You mean not to spend money on
Ohio. Yeah, not to spend money in Ohio. Right. So that's going to be the challenge. And I said this on the radio. That'll be the challenge for Bernie, is to make sure that the National Republican Senatorial Committee comes in and helps him. Now, we have 49 seats. I'll give you some background over some conversation I've had over the last couple of days. We're going to win West Virginia. So the Senate will have 50 right now. So now they have to decide where they spend their money, all right? And look at what happened in Maryland yesterday. Now they're saying the former governor of Maryland might be one of the easiest Republicans to win the Senate. So that's what they'll look at. They'll look there. Then they'll look at Montana, which is a cheap kind of state. Then they'll look at Arizona, which is also, in the end, the reason they didn't come into Ohio in 2018, and this is in print, the Senate leader said Ohio's too expensive. We would have rather played in other states than Ohio. So the challenge will be, yes, Bernie, he had a remarkable win in the primary, but now he's up against a well-funded Democrat. I heard yesterday that he has up to $65 million already behind him.
I mentioned that yesterday. Yeah, I mentioned that yesterday, and that's probably just the start. There's no doubt they're going to pour. But they're going to they'll spend $100 million on this race if they have to, because they know that the majority could be in the balance.
Right. So they'll spend $100 million, which means the biggest challenge for Bernie will be making sure the Senate committee comes in. If the Senate committee doesn't come in, it doesn't matter how much. We got to go back to 2018. I had a strong win in my primary. I just use that as an example. Money didn't come in though, so I got outspent $45 million to $4 million, and basically Sherrod Brown was able to determine and make independence. And Bob, that's the key. 75% of our electorate in Ohio is independence, and those are the people that will make the decision in this race, not the Republicans. It's the independents. And Sherrod's going to say a lot of things. I chuckle. Bob, I was in a store the other day, and a woman came up to me and said, "Hey, I remember you. You were the guy with in the corporate jet flying around with the strip club owner." And I laughed. I said, "Yeah, that's what Sherrod did to Jim Renacci." Wasn't true. Was an absolute false story. But Sherrod will be doing that with $100 million over the next 7 or 8 months. And that's going to be the difficulty for anyone that wins, including Bernie. Will he be able to compete with the money coming in that will destroy his name, which will destroy his reputation, and will find things that Bernie never believed were true? They're going to come out, and they're going to say those are true.
All right. I've got a couple of responses. One is to talk about that last part. I think, he's going to be tried and tested in this thing, because he just had to do that with what Matt Dolan did to him with the $10 million in attack ads that Dolan spent in the last 6 weeks, almost all of them. There's one or two quick blurbs about Frank LaRose because he was never a threat. But what Dolan did with the attack ads against Bernie Moreno, including some made-up stuff, just like your made-up situation you just talked about, they did to you, that Sherrod did to you, and it didn't stop him because the people didn't believe it and the people didn't buy it. And again, the massive conservative figures that supported him came out and doubled down in the face of all that. So I think he's going to have some experience dealing with attacks, including bogus stuff. And then the second thing I want to ask you to compare and contrast for me the conditions when you ran compared to what they are now with Bernie's run here against Sherrod Brown. I literally don't know the answer. I'm asking you to tell me, because I want to know why they didn't come in with the funds that they needed, that the Senator, Republican Senatorial Committee. Why did they not come into Ohio and back you the way they needed to? Again, what do you think the difference is between then and now, and whether or not you think they will now?
Well, and again, it's all about money. But I will tell you this. If you go back to 2018, the national feeling was Democrats plus eight. That's a real key. So back in 2018, there was a real push. You have to look at the barometer in the country. And right now,
Sorry about that. Go ahead.
And that's all right. And right now, I don't believe we're a Democrat plus eight. We're probably a Republican plus four or five. That's going to play well for Bernie Moreno. It did not play well for me in 2018. Remember, in 2018, we lost a lot of seats in Congress. There was a lot happening. It was a plus eight Republican feeling. So that's a big key. The other big key will really be, can we win seats otherwise for cheaper dollars? Remember, Montana is as big as one district in the state of Ohio. So you could spend $20 million in Montana and probably do the same thing that costs $100 million in Ohio. So how many states are out there that they can play in? And that's the game they'll play. But the real key was in 2018, it was a plus eight Republican. Now, I will go back. If you think about it, they spent money for Josh Mandel 6 years earlier. That year was a plus six in sentiment for Republicans. So that will also make a difference. I do think the key here, there's a couple good keys here for Bernie Moreno. Number one, it looks like the only incumbent that the senatorial committee is going to have to stand up and defend is Ted Cruz in Texas, where in 2018 they had to stand up and defend the Arizona senator and the Nevada senator. So if you go back, you'll see they spent almost $300 million in Nevada and Arizona. By the way, they lost both of those seats in 2018. They won. They didn't play in my race. They did play in West Virginia. They did play in cheaper states, but they had to dump a lot of money in incumbent states. This is going to be a positive for Bernie. Only one state they have to defend, and it's probably not a lot of defense. It'll be Ted Cruz in Texas.
All very interesting analysis. I would throw in on top of that, though, the one difference or another difference between 2024 and your race in 2018 is you weren't coming off of the most disastrous presidency and Democrat-controlled Senate that we have ever had. Don't you think that's going to play here, especially in Ohio? And I think the senatorial committee is going to have to consider this now, that we are in the midst, and we just found out they're not... The Fed is not touching the rate again because inflation continues to be high and it continues to hurt all Ohioans and all Americans. I mean, with the Biden border, the Bidenflation, the rising crime and everything else, I mean, he's losing in every battleground state poll and in the national polls to Donald Trump because people are done with the Democrats right now. Don't you think that that is going to play a huge factor in whether or not a Republican upstart can take out a three-term senator? They couldn't do it before, but this is a very different, you know, set of conditions now with the American people turning against Democrats and turning against Biden.
Well, and again, Bob, that's the sentiment factor. You know, in 2018, it was a D+8. I told you it's an R+6 right now. That's because of Biden. And that's because of all this stuff. It could be an R+8 by the time we get to November, which will play very well for Bernie. But I've told this to Bernie. I've told this to the other Senate candidates. You also have to remember, and I know your listeners aren't going to like this. I didn't like it either. But Sherrod Brown is liked in Ohio by Republicans, independents, and Democrats, of course. And there were many Republicans, even in 2018, that I would walk into their office and say, Jim, you know what? You're the guy. I support you. But I got to tell you, Sherrod was just in here, and I like him too. And what was shocking, Bob, in those times, they were donating to me and donating to Sherrod.
Be specific. Jim, if you would, be specific. What did those donors tell you they liked about Sherrod Brown? I mean, I look at this guy's record, and I see one of the most disastrous left-wing extremist voting records in America. So what are these Republicans that you're talking to in Ohio that say they support Sherrod, too? What are they saying as to why?
So what was great, and I'll never forget this, I walked in to the owner of the Cincinnati Reds, and his exact words were, you know, Sherrod was just here. I don't agree with any of his policies. Likeable guy. We talked baseball. And, you know, I like him. And he ended up donating to Sherrod and donating to me. So there's a perfect example of how Sherrod comes across. Now, I'm going to tell you another thing Sherrod does that Bernie will have to be very careful of. When I would raise money from a donor in Ohio, it was almost automatic. As soon as I filed my report and showed that, you know, John Doe gave me $5,000, John Doe would call me and say, you're not going to believe this. I just got a call from Sherrod Brown. And Sherrod Brown said, listen, you may be supporting Jim Renacci right now, but if I defeat him, I'll remember your support. And so Sherrod is very good at that as well. And let's face it, Sherrod's a very powerful Democrat in Washington. We may not like that, but he does have the power because he's been there so long, which is why we need term limits. But
yeah, we do.
That'll be the
Well, we can't even get Republicans to back that. Mitch McConnell just said again yesterday that he opposes term limits. He's rallying people against the idea of term limits, for crying out loud. That's a problem. But don't you think, and you say he's very popular, a popular Democrat in Washington, and I'm not saying you're wrong. I don't understand why.
Powerful.
Yeah, powerful. Powerful and popular, I guess. But Ohio is also different now than it was 8 years ago. Aside from the things that I just mentioned about Trump and about Biden, just the fact that I think Ohio is probably a deeper red now than we have been in decades, right? I mean, sweeping every single statewide race, you know, getting a majority on the Ohio Supreme Court, having the supermajority in the legislature, and going back to, you know, some of the other results from Tuesday, at least six of the Blue 22 Republican rhinos in the House who sided with the Democrats in the speaker steal, but got bounced, and that's going to create a very, very difficult situation for any others who did that, who are not going to want to roll the dice the next time. My point being, we have become a very, very red state, and maybe much more so than even in 2018 when you ran. Doesn't that bode well for Bernie, even though Sherrod has managed to do this three times before?
Well, again, I tell people I don't believe we've become a very red state. We've become a state where most of our registered voters are unaffiliated. So now we can call them unaffiliated conservatives, which they probably are. But remember, 75% of registered voters in Ohio are unaffiliated. They're not with the Republican Party, and they're not with the Democrat Party.
But they're voting Republican, though. I mean, at least in terms of the outcome.
Yeah, but let's go back to last year. And again, another curveball I'll throw you. Issue one should have failed in a conservative state in November, but it passed. So Sherrod's going to take advantage of those issues. Sherrod has already come out and said, Bernie believes in, and by the way, I'm as pro-life as you can get, but that's the fight that Sherrod Brown's going to bring to the table. The other thing that's going to be extremely important for Bernie, and I've told him these things, you know, you win statewide races in eight counties. Now, Bernie was able to win that, those eight counties, in the primary. But now you got to go into a general election where you have a lot more votes coming in. So, yeah, we have moved more conservative as a state, but we have also lost more Republicans. Remember, we had 3.9 million Republicans in 2011. I believe that's the number. Today we have 800 and some thousand. We don't have as many Republican registered Republicans in Ohio as we did.
Right. Well, and to me, though, that kind of underscores the point, though. They may not be affiliated, as you pointed out, party affiliated as Republicans, but they're voting Republican, again, because the numbers show that, the supermajorities and the statewide races and so on and so forth. We didn't even have a very popular governor running this past time, you know, after the, again, I think the open primary cost you in a big, big way in your fight against DeWine with the crazy hat getting in the way, too. But we didn't even have a very popular governor, but it wasn't even close because, again, I think we are much more, whether we are Republican by affiliation, maybe not, but certainly by voting results, we are. And I think that's going to bode well for Bernie. So last question for you, Jim Renacci, will you campaign with or for and help support Bernie Moreno in this race to try to boot Sherrod out of there?
Well, sure. And Medina County Republican Party will as well, but I got to tell you, what I'm going to be campaigning over the next couple of years on is closing this primary. You said something extremely important. In 2022, if you look at the numbers, almost identical to 2024. 130% turnout. We don't know who voted then. We don't know who voted now. That's going to be the battle cry for me, is we got to close these primaries. But while I'm doing that, I'm going to try and support every Republican candidate to get them across the you know, we're going to be pushing for Trump. We're going to be pushing for Bernie. We're going to be pushing for everybody. And Medina County, I mean, Bernie won big in Medina County. So it shows you that we continue to bring Republicans home in Medina County. But I'm more worried statewide. I'm going to continue this fight. Any Republican that tells me, oh, we don't need to close the primary. You know why they don't want the primary closed? Because they like the idea of Democrats and unaffiliated voters crossing over. I'll leave you with this, Bob. Do you really think the Browns, and I've said this time and time again, want the Pittsburgh Steelers deciding who the Browns draft choices are? Yeah, I'd love to hear a Browns fan tell me, oh, yeah, that's okay. That's okay that the Steelers decide who our draft choices are. No,
it's a good analogy. It's a good metaphor, and I agree with you, by the way. I want to close those primaries, too. 100% agree with you. But I'm also glad to hear that you and Medina County GOP and everybody, every oar needs to be in the water. If we're going to boot a three-term incumbent, every oar needs to be in the water and rowing in the same direction. Yours and the Medina County oar is a very large one. So I hope that we are all indeed rowing in the same direction and getting Sherrod Brown out of there, because our republic cannot take another Democrat administration and Democrat-controlled Senate. So it is that important. Jim Renacci, thanks so much for the time. We appreciate it.
Thank you. You have a great day.
You got it. 9:57. We'll take a timeout and come back with Dr. Piper next. AM 1420.com.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny. We'll preserve for our children this, the last best hope of man on earth, or we'll sentence them to take the last step into 1,000 years of darkness.
This is Always Right Radio on AM 1420, The Answer. With your host, Bob France.
That's what it is, and that's who we are. Good morning once again. Thanks for being with us. 6 minutes after 10 o'clock on this Thursday, the 21st morning of the third month of the year of our Lord, 2024. Thanks to Jim Renacci for coming in. A lot of really important information discussing there, and he's got some legitimate questions about the open primary process in the state of Ohio and how many Democrats did cross over in that Senate race. You heard the numbers, the number of registered Republicans versus the number of people who pulled Republican ballots and voted. Overwhelmingly, over 50% of the votes went to Bernie Moreno in that Senate fight. So some very legitimate questions, and we can take calls on that, too, in just a bit. 216-901-0945 and 888-281-1110. But now, as it is Thursday, and it's the top of our second hour, that means it's time to check in with the general. That's what I like to call him. He's leading our army through these culture wars that we did not start, but we absolutely must win. He is Dr. Everett Piper. He is a past university president, rather. He's a best-selling author, a twice-weekly columnist for the Washington Times, and he is also a podcast host. He does the Rebellion podcast and radio, so you can get that, check that out wherever you do get your podcast. He also happens to dabble in a little bit of politics as a county commissioner in Osage County, Oklahoma. Dr. Piper, welcome back.
Good morning, Bob.
Good to talk to you, and I'm so glad to see that you wrote this week about DEI. This is getting a little bit out of hand. You and I have talked about this in some depth in the past. I'm looking forward to going further into it now. DEI is so dangerous because of what it means in terms of qualified individuals being put into very important positions that could impact or maybe even literally determine, you know, the life and death of an individual. If you've got the wrong people holding the scalpel because they are there because of diversity standards or inclusion standards, that's a legitimate problem. If you've got somebody behind the controls in the cockpit, same story. DEI is dangerous, but it's more than just dangerous for people. It's dangerous for the culture, essentially. Tell us more.
Well, I actually write about this to some extent in my book, Grow Up, Life Isn't Safe, But It's Good. And essentially what I'm arguing is that the entire philosophy, the worldview, the foundational assumptions of diversity, equity, and inclusion are divisive. It pits us against them, you against me. It's a selfish agenda. And essentially, if you go back to Solomon and Proverbs in the Bible, we're told that a cord of three strands is not easily broken, but a cord of one is essentially defenseless. And DEI, it, by definition, seeks to divide us all into our own little cabals, our own little cliques, so that you can divide and conquer. And why do I say it's childish? Because children are always thinking of themselves. How many times do you hear a 5-year-old or a 10-year-old or, you know, children in that age bracket, or even teenagers for that matter, and unfortunately it's perpetuated itself into adulthood in our culture right now, where we're constantly saying, that's mine. It's all about me. You've hurt my feelings. This emphasis and this focus on self is not healthy. It's a perpetual adolescence within our culture, where you've got pouting teenagers, adolescents, that want their stuff, and they don't think about anybody else. They don't think about the body as a whole and the health of the community. They just want their toys. It's like the 2-year-old throwing a tantrum in the grocery store, and you watch mom let him do it because he wants that $1 plastic toy. So what does she ultimately do? She rewards him and gives him the toy just to shut him up. I would argue that DEI as a philosophy isn't much different than that. Adults see the value of working together rather than just one hand clapping in midair. You know, in my article, I paint the picture of a symphony. If you just perform individually and you're blowing away on your trombone, for example, you're not going to produce beautiful music. You've got to have all the instruments of the symphony working together to have that concerto. Likewise in athletics, you've got to be working together as a team. You can't have the ball hog who's jacking the ball up every time down the court because it doesn't work. He may score his points, but the team will lose. DEI, by definition, encourages us to behave this way as individuals within our culture. It destroys community. It destroys unity. It's the antithesis of a United States. It's a divided states, and it's all divided on the assumption of I deserve mine. And that is not an adult way to behave. It's childish.
Yeah, and that's a really great analogy. In addition to the childishness of it and the selfishness of it within people, let's say, who are supposed to be on the same side, but there is also the us against them part of this that you talk about as well. The entire agenda is, hey, they have more than you have. That's not fair. You should have just as much as them, regardless of the fact that they worked much, much harder, put much, much more time, much, much more effort into getting what they have, whether it be through promotion or through advancement and so on and so forth, or maybe even taking out a loan and rolling the dice and hanging out a shingle and, wow, look, they made it and you didn't. Well, that's not fair. You deserve just as much as they have. That us against them division, to me, is just as, if not more, dangerous than the selfish ball hog on one side, because these people are being told you are owed this, you are owed the same outcome that person got, regardless of the difference in your efforts.
Well, and it's also unbiblical. I point out that St. Luke in Acts, the book of Acts, he says that all believers were together and had everything in common. Now, some liberals within the church would argue that that's a recipe for socialism. Well, that's not what was going on. The assembly of the church, the men and women that got together, that it included the original apostles and new converts. It included people from every walk of life, socioeconomic backgrounds, nationalities, race, ethnic origins. The church was diverse, but their point was we have everything in common. What was in common? Our commitment to Christ. They didn't give up their personal resources because of communism or socialism. They gave up what they had because they recognized that nobody deserved anything. It was the opposite of claiming, I deserve my fair share. The church actually recognized that we're going to help people because of Christ, not because of communism. We're going to help people because we believe in the Savior, not because we're socialists. I mean, the opposite was true here. We don't hear any of that divisive rhetoric. So I would argue the answer is clearly given to us in Scripture, and that is we are the body of Christ, a body of individual components that work together for the good of the whole. We're unified. We're not diversified, if you will. We stand together. We don't stand separately. And again, this is a neo-Marxist movement. Diversity, equity, inclusion is neo-Marxist. It's predicated on the assumption of conflict. And you use the conflict to overthrow the power base so that somebody else can move into the vacuum of power and start controlling all of our lives. This is not a healthy recipe, a good recipe for a free people and a free country.
We're talking to Dr. Everett Piper this morning, who has written a couple of great pieces for the Washington Times this week, as he does. Let's move on to number two, Dr. Piper. And you wrote about this last week when you talked about voting for a moral man, an immoral man for moral reasons. That's a paraphrase, of course. We've got to do the right thing. And your question is about voting for the lesser of two evils. Dear Dr. E, I would like to hear your response to those who believe that voting for the lesser of two evils is still voting for evil. I'm 69 years old. Neither party seems to want to solve the divisive issues such as immigration, runaway debt, punitive taxation, detestable public schools, abortion, runaway inflation, etc. All they do is keep us at each other's throats while they pick our pockets clean. 70% of us don't want another Biden versus Trump dog and pony show, but that's precisely what the Uniparty is going to cram down our throats. I say all of this because I listen to your podcast, read your columns, and respect your perspective. This is a smart man. Candid fan from West Virginia. So, Dr. Piper, is it still voting for evil if you vote for the lesser of two?
The See, we're hearing that a lot right now. And you know, Bob, that I'm not a huge Trump fan. And your listeners know that I have questions. I have reservations. I think there are better candidates to represent the conservative movement. But it doesn't matter what I think right now. Donald Trump has been chosen as the nominee for the Republican Party. Mm-hmm. That's a fact. So at this point in time, unless I want to throw my vote away on some third-party candidate, that won't make any difference. It won't make any difference. So the only reason I would be doing that is out of principle. I disagree with that. And I use the example of triage in the old MASH TV series. MASH, the Mobile Army Surgical Hospital. And you remember the opening scene in that particular TV show, or at least most people do. It's all of these doctors and nurses rushing toward the helicopters that are bringing in soldiers that have been injured in the battlefield. And they rush them from the helicopter landing pad into the emergency operating room. And then what do they have to do? They make triage decisions. Triage is an ugly business. Triage is a compromise. Because you've got all of these soldiers that need care, but you recognize that some of them are damaged beyond your ability to do anything. And so you make a triage decision to try to do your best to save as many lives as possible, recognizing that we live in a broken and evil world, and war represents a very bloody and ugly business, and that it's not going to be perfect. Some people will be lost. Some soldiers will die. But that doesn't mean that you're lobbying for or voting for, if you will, death. No, you're making a decision for the greatest good possible in the midst of this broken world. In other words, you're not voting for the, in a sense, you are voting for the lesser of two evils, but you're voting for less evil rather than more. And I think in politics, we need to recognize that our vote is, yes, sometimes we are voting for the lesser of two evils, if you will, the lesser of two broken people, two broken men that aren't perfect. Welcome to the real world. But that doesn't mean you're voting for evil. It means you're voting for less evil than you'd get if you voted for the other guy. And when I look at Donald Trump versus Joe Biden, when I look at the Republican platform versus the Democrat platform, there's no question. There's no question who I have to vote for, because my triage decision is going to be to save as many babies as possible. My triage decision is going to be to vote for the guy that will give more dignity to women, give them their own sport, give them their own bathroom, give them their own shower, recognize their dignity and stop compromising it through delusion. I'm going to vote for an economy that's stronger rather than weaker. I'm going to vote for a secure border rather than one that doesn't exist. That's a triage decision. Is Donald Trump perfect? Absolutely not. Do I think I'm voting for evil? Absolutely not. I'm voting for less rather than more.
I think that's such a brilliant way to phrase this. I've heard people say what the letter writer said to you. Well, if you're voting for the lesser of two evils, you're still voting for evil. So how can you do that? You should sit the whole thing out. And I love your phrasing. No, if I'm voting for the lesser of two evils, I am indeed choosing to have less evil than we would otherwise. And that is. And thank you, by the way, for the MASH references all throughout that column. I had such great memories just remembering so many of the hilarious scenes in what is obviously a serious situation of war, but it was one of the best comedies ever on television, and I enjoyed the reminiscing through the column about some of those characters you wrote about. Dr. Piper, I'm going to take a time out here. It's 10:20. We've got time to get one more topic in, and we're going to talk about, I think, how did you phrase it? The face of 21st century racism. What does it look like? I'll let you tell everybody coming up next on Always Right Radio, AM 1420. More.
That's willyousee1vet.org.
Okay, 10:24. I've got time for a few more minutes with Dr. Everett Piper on AM 1420, The Answer. Okay, Dr. Piper, we're talking about the face of, I guess I could have gone with face of evil, but we're actually talking about the face of racism as you describe it. The UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres personally selected a Pakistani-American named Aisha Siddiqa as an advisor. Tell us about this.
This young woman is an advisor to, like you just said, the UN Secretary General. And she has openly called for stripping all whites of power. She says it's a revolutionary fight. This is a fight to disenfranchise all whites, not only in the United States, but across the world, because everything that plagues humanity right now is the fault of Caucasians. That's what this woman is saying. And I'm not exaggerating. I paraphrase, but I'm not exaggerating. She wants to do this because we need to accelerate global climate action. She goes on to say negative things about white people. She is a Marxist. She's anti-capitalist. And she's openly saying that she's denigrating white people because of her Marxist agenda. She wants to control the environment through government largesse, and she wants to silence any opposition that stands for what she would describe as a white agenda, which essentially is capitalism, free enterprise, constitutional liberty, and the expansion of freedoms across the Western world as the result of, if you want to go back a couple hundred years, Great Britain and its influence on the European continent as well as around the world. This woman doesn't believe in that. She says that we're the ones responsible for everything that's happening in Gaza, everything that's happening in the Middle East, everything that's happening in Pakistan. It's our fault. Now, what does this sound like? It sounds exactly like what we talked about in the first segment of the show. This is diversity, equity, and inclusion. It divides people by color of skin. It does not acknowledge content of character. It says us against them, and the people that are on the them side of the equation should be silenced, canceled, and actually even put into categories that are illegal. That's what's going on in the United Nations right now. Donald Trump is absolutely right. We should defund this thing. We shouldn't even participate with it.
Yeah, you just beat me to the punch. I was going to say I don't want to bring everything back to politics, but at the end of the day, you know, my first blush reaction to this article that I read that you sent me about her is, well, it's a good thing she's only at the United Nations and she's not in the United States. But at the end of it all, this is exactly the point. The globalists who push back against Trump, the globalists of which Joe Biden is one, and virtually every member of the new uber Marxist Democrat Party, they want the United Nations to call the shots. They want the globalists at the WHO and the WEF and so on and so forth. They want them to make the decisions for the United States. It's why they will move heavens and earth to get to keep Donald Trump out of office, because Donald Trump is the only one who is saying what needs to be done here, and that is complete disassociation from the globalists, including the UN.
Yeah. And this woman actually says, she says this, you want to know why I got into climate activism? It wasn't because I wanted to protect the environment. I became involved because the West slaughtered, bombed, and starved my people to death in the name of oil. And no one talks about it. So she's even saying she's not even a climate activist. She wants to get her pound of flesh against them. It's us against them. It's Marxism against capitalism. It's predicated on the neo-Marxist philosophy of conflict.
Did you mention the part about her being the 2023 Time Woman of the Year? I don't know if I heard you say
that
part.
I didn't get into that, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, but right. I mean, this woman, with all of her hateful agenda and her hateful comments publicly about white people, about, you know, racial division, you know, she's a full-on Marxist, obviously. She is also opposed to prisons, is opposed to policing. She believes in abolishing all of those things, just thinking everybody can be trusted to be good, I guess. But she is the embodiment of all of this radicalism that has kind of taken over leftist ideology, whether it be in America or in other countries. And she was named the Time Magazine Woman of the Year last year in 2023. So she's not some, you know, one-off. She's not just some, you know, meaningless, pointless outlier. She is being celebrated. She's being championed. And there are going to be people who model themselves after her as well.
And back to the point, when we vote, you vote for less evil rather than more. And how in the world could you vote in any way, shape, or form if you've got a head, left shoulders, and a brain that functions in any remote way whatsoever? How could you vote for more of this woman's philosophy, which is very consistent with the Biden administration's philosophy and the progressive left philosophy here in the United States? You vote for this stuff, and the chickens are going to come home to roost. They're telling you exactly what they think of you right now.
Dr. Everett Piper, terrific job as each and every week, but I really appreciate both columns and this one that you turned me on to as well. We need to make sure that this stuff is front and center in the minds of the American voters, because there's only one way to stop this. Dr. Piper, thank you. Great job. We'll talk to you next week.
Blessings. Bye-bye.
All right. That's Dr. Everett Piper. It's 10:30. We're going to get a timeout here. Wow, this has been a packed show so far. Two interviews and a whole lot of very important comments on issues, and we're not done. At 11:10, half an hour from now, we're going to be talking about Kyle Rittenhouse's appearance coming up at Kent State University by way of Turning Point USA. We're going to talk to somebody from Turning Point at Kent that is making that happen, and we're going to talk about the potential clash that would be involved in this situation. But that's coming up at 11:10, so the next half hour is yours. 216-901-0945. You want to comment on the interviews we've done, the topics we've covered, the top 9 at 9, any of it. It's all fair game. Join us on Always Right.
The Answer.
You know, that little message there from Charlie Kirk is a really important one. Seriously. If you like and enjoy what you get on this program, this station as a whole, but on this program, you seriously support our sponsors. And not just because you like the programs, but because I don't partner with sponsors that I don't believe in. I don't partner with sponsors and talk about their products if I think they're garbage to get a paycheck. No, 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 no. I am very selective in what I do and with whom I do it. And I'm telling you now, the people that sponsor this program, and there are a variety of different types of businesses, they're the best at what they do. If they weren't, I wouldn't do it. So please, when you're looking for, you know, various home needs or products or, you know, healthcare or insurance, these kinds of things, seriously, make sure that you are looking first, to Always Right Radio and to AM 1420 The Answer to see who we're talking with and who we're representing and who is bringing you this great content each and every day. It's really important. I really am glad we hear that, message from Charlie Kirk from time to time. So, let's go back to a couple of, whatever you want to talk about is fair game. 216-901-0945 is the number. We got a half an hour of open lines right now. We'll talk to a guest from Turning Point USA at Kent State, that chapter, coming up at 11:10. But between now and then, we can talk about whatever you want. But I do want to kind of hit this EV story a little bit more, because yesterday was a monumental day. I saw this story, and the first response that I had, when I say it's monumental, because Biden is actually, you know, doing what he said he would do. And that's not a good thing. Normally, hey, that's the way Jim Jordan wrote a book saying, do what we said we would do. But what he said we would do is positive, and so we want him to do it. What Biden said he would do is negative, and we don't want it to be done, but it is being done. And he said he was going to force you out of your car. He was going to force you out of your internal combustion engine gasoline powered car in favor of getting into the EVs. This is what he said he was going to do, and now we are finding out exactly how right he was and how serious he was about it. This administration is changing the emission standards through the EPA to make sure that by 2030 they can't sell your cars anymore. You will, and that's only 6 years away. Hell, we're headed into the second quarter of 2024, so less than 6 years away. We're talking about you not being able to drive the vehicle of your choice in what is supposed to be a free country, in which the free market is supposed to reign. The free market is supposed to determine what products sell and what companies grow as a result of that, and which products do not, in which companies die because of that. That's what a free market does. That's what capitalism is all about. He and they are taking that away from you. Why? Do you think Joe Biden really believes that gasoline-powered engines are killing the planet? No, not at all. But there are powerful forces, going back to what I just talked about with Dr. Piper, many of them globalists. There are powerful forces whose agenda is much, much more nefarious than just getting you out of those vehicles. The agenda is to make you a slave to the state. And it's not just the United States, but a slave to the one world government state. And they have extraordinary power over some, you know, easily manipulated individuals. And I don't think Joe Biden is one of the brains behind the power. I think he's one of the easily manipulated individuals. He is beholden in large part to the gangrene nuts, to the Green New Deal socialists and globalists. And this is all a part of their agenda, so he made it part of his. And now he's actually following through. Like I said, do what we said we would do is a good mantra, but only if you say you're going to do good things. This is not a good thing. The EPA is now projecting that Americans could waste billions of dollars worth of time juicing up their electric vehicles, and they don't care. Billions of dollars worth of time. If you need gas in your vehicle right now on the way to work, well, how long is it going to take you? Even if there's a short line at the gas station, it's going to take you no more than 5 minutes, probably a minute or two to wait, maybe another minute or two to get your card inserted and out again, and then maybe a minute or two to fill the tank. They take your car away from you. They make it impossible for you to do that because it's going to take eons of time, hours of time collectively, for you to juice up your vehicle. And you may not have any choice but to juice it up in a public juicing station. And I'm using that verbiage just because it's in the article. But your charging of your vehicle may have to be done at public stations, charging stations, because maybe you're unfortunate enough to live in an apartment or in a home without a garage, without a 220 line and a charging port at your home. Maybe you live in a public apartment building. Maybe you live, like I said, in a house, but you don't have a garage and you are a street parker. It's the only place for you to put your vehicle. You don't even have a driveway. How are you going to charge it overnight? How are you going to charge it other than at a public charging station? Costing you hours of your time and maybe hours of work. There are so many layers to what is wrong with this policy, with this new policy, this new federal regulation put forth by Biden's EPA. It's hard to list them all. As part of the Biden administration's broader EV agenda, the EPA finalized aggressive tailpipe emission standards on Wednesday, designed to force manufacturers to massively increase the proportion of EVs they produce and sell. Again, even if nobody wants these pieces of EV crap, I mean, we're still in winter, right? We just had snow yesterday, day before. We're still in winter. In the coldest parts of winter, what did we see all around on the country when these cold snaps hit various cities and regions of the United States? What did we see? We saw EV graveyards, parking lots, where cars couldn't be moved because they wouldn't start because their batteries don't work in super cold temperatures, even with a full charge. That's what we saw. For crying out loud, Americans don't want them, not to mention the cost of them, over the top. Literally from the time you buy it, you know, your purchase price. Forget about these federal subsidies. They mean literally nothing. But then, most importantly, when it comes time to repair them. And according to Consumer Reports, EV owners report 80% more repair issues with their vehicles than do people who drive gas-powered vehicles. And Biden and the globalists want you to be among them. And oh, by the way, not only are the repairs more frequent, they're more expensive. The parts are more expensive. And when it comes down to the actual lifeblood of the vehicle, the battery, good luck. There is a shelf life on those batteries, particularly the bigger, heavier ones, that is a shorter shelf life. And when that battery goes, it costs more than the value of the vehicle to replace the battery, which means you will end up financing the vehicle all over again. Except for the fact that you probably can't because it will have been totaled out by the insurance company. Just like if you smash up your car and the repairs are more than the value of the vehicle and they call it totaling out, they're going to do that when your battery goes. You're going to have to buy another one. The regulatory impact analysis for this new standard, this tailpipe emission standard, features estimates for costs over time spent refueling the EVs over the coming decades. The EPA is estimating that Americans will have wasted approximately $1.7 billion worth of time charging their EVs by 2055. Many refueling events for electric vehicles would be expected to occur overnight when the vehicle is parked or during the workday using an employer-owned charge point, neither of which require extra time for the driver, especially compared to refueling a liquid-fueled vehicle. Similarly, drivers may opt to use public charging while shopping or at other places. Again, I'm going to stop and make the obvious points here. That's provided those things are even available. Do you have any idea what the change in infrastructure would be to make these things available for people to charge while they're at work? How many work parking lots do you know that have a charging station at every spot? The answer is zero. Maybe there's a few places that have one or two. And even if they do expand the infrastructure, by the way, which will raise the cost for all of us, because a lot of that will be done with tax dollars, even if they do, say triple or quadruple, let's say there's 10 charging ports or charging stations in a mall or grocery store or public parking lot or at your place of employment's parking lot. Again, depending on how many people park there, they're going to be lined up waiting for their time to plug in. Are you going to be able to do that? Are you going to be able to sit there and wait? Or are you going to go in and work and then come out and see, oh, good, somebody left, and then race to get that thing charging while you're at work? And then, as I said, at home overnight, what if you don't have a garage? What if you don't have your own ability to charge at your own place where you live? What if you live in an apartment building? Many refueling events for the electric vehicles would be expected to occur overnight. I already did that part. Let's see. Charging events will undoubtedly require drivers to take extra time to charge, especially when drivers are in the midst of an extended road trip or a commute. These mid-trip charging events are the focus of this analysis. So it goes into the charging issue. I hadn't even talked about it. I've talked about the cost. I hadn't even talked about the infrastructure for the communities, for the state. What do you think is going to happen to our highways? Do you know what the average weight of an internal combustion engine vehicle is? Around 2,500 pounds. Do you know what the average weight is for an EV? Add another 1,000 or more, depending on the type of EV. Those batteries are massive, they're heavy, and they will destroy roads at an exponentially faster rate than your current car's tires do. And we'll have to pay to have all of those. What about bridges? Bridges are going to have to be reinforced. They're going to have to retrofit all of them to handle rather than X numbers of tonnage of vehicles crossing bridges to Y, which is going to be obviously an exponentially higher amount of tonnage because of the weight of those batteries. Did anybody ever tell you about parking garages? I park in one at downtown Cleveland 3 days a week. I'm on the fourth level. Start putting EVs on all of those levels as opposed to the regular vehicles that are there now. What do you think is going to happen? Those parking garage levels will not be able to handle that weight. They will have to either be somehow reinforced and strengthened and retrofitted or destroyed and rebuilt, able to handle the weights of the new vehicles that are all going to be required by the federal government. How do you think that's going to go over? I mean, we're talking about this, and I didn't even mention the most egregious part of what Biden's new little EPA admission standard story will do, is it hands power to China. Xi Jinping and the Chinese Communist Party are laughing their little heads off right now at Joe Biden pushing forth this this emissions new standard, this new regulation. Who controls the mining for all of those rare earth minerals that build these batteries? You know we're not going to be mining for lithium and cobalt and manganese and nickel and graphite and copper here in the United States, right? And by the way, I thought mining was bad. That's why coal mining has to... What did Joe Biden say? We're going to end all of the coal-fired power plants. We're going to not build any new ones. And we're going to shut down the ones that already exist. How many times have we heard that? Mining is bad. But we have to mine for all of these other things. Oh, that's okay. We're going to do it in African countries. We're going to do it in other parts of the world where those rare earth minerals are more prevalent. China controls it. Then China puts them all together and then ships them off to the United States, and we're the ones who pay for them. You think the planet is going to be able to handle all of that mining for all of those things when you take, what is it? What did I say earlier? 7%? Let me hit that. Yeah. A record number of electric vehicles rolled off dealer lots last year. Talking about 1.2 million of them. So a record number of them rolled off the dealer's lots. But that still made up for just 7.6% of the total U.S. car sales. That means, let's do the math there, 92.4% are gas-powered vehicles. When that 7.6% climbs up to the 50% and then the 67% that Biden has chosen to target for 2030 and 2032, how much more, how many more of those mines, and by the way, I won't even get into the inhumanity and the slave labor, child slave labor, that is used to extract those minerals out of those mines in poor African countries, primarily. We're supposed to care about that, right? Whatever happened to all of the concern for the black and brown people? Oh, that's only in the United States. If we can't see the black and brown people going down, sending their little five-year-olds into the mines to come up with the cobalt in the Congo, if we can't see it, then it doesn't bother us. We just assume that, you know, the cobalt fairy made this available to us. If we don't see it, it doesn't count, right? It's kind of like the mine itself. Well, if we don't see the mining happening, like we would a West Virginia or a Kentucky coal mine or an Ohio coal mine, if we don't see it happening because they're mining for it in foreign countries, well, then the planet isn't being harmed because that must be a different planet over there. Our planet is the one that has North America on it. I mean, on and on and on it goes. So Xi Jinping is laughing his fool little head off. The Chinese Communist Party is thrilled. Joe Biden is keeping a promise. He's keeping his gangrene political base happy because he promised them that we would do this. He promised it.
Fuels, including coal and fracking, in a Biden administration?
No, we would work it out. We would make sure it's eliminated.
No more drilling on federal lands. No more drilling, including offshore. No ability for the oil industry to continue to drill, period.
I guarantee you. We're going to end fossil fuel.
What about, say, stopping fracking and stopping new pipeline infrastructure?
No more, no new fracking.
We are going to get rid of fossil fuels.
I've argued against any more oil drilling or gas drilling on federal lands.
No one's going to build a coal-fired plant again, and we're going to get rid of the ones we have now.
Have a transition from the oil industry, yes.
Would you be willing to sacrifice some of that growth, even knowing potentially that it could displace thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of blue-collar workers in the interest of transitioning to that greener economy?
The answer is yes.
At the risk of beating this all the way into the ground, but I think it's important that we do it. Honestly, we need to beat this into the ground. This needs to be brought up. The extraordinary idiocy, the blatant stupidity of the radical green gangrene initiative left, this needs to be exposed. They think that electricity comes from the little holes where you plug the cord into. They don't bother to ask, where did those holes get the electricity from? Where does the line on the other side of the wall go? And what does it connect to? And how is that electricity created? And the answer is, overwhelmingly from coal. The same resource that we have in abundance in the United States that they want to close down. You heard that line, right, about closing all of the coal plants and then not building any new ones? Coal and natural gas provide an overwhelming percentage of the electricity that will be needed to run these cars that he is now mandating be sold. Think about the stupidity of that. Coal has got to go, but we want more electric cars. How are you going to power those electric cars without coal and natural gas, which you have just declared war on? How are you going to do it? How many little, or massive, I should say, of those giant propellers in the sky, talking about the wind farms, how many of those wind turbines do you think it's going to take to try to replace all of the power and energy that we get from coal and natural gas? not possible. How many solar panels? Do you know how many millions of acres of land it would take to put solar panels up in solar farms and wind farms to try to even come close to get one tiny percentage of what the energy is that we need, that we get serviced by oil and natural gas and by coal? They have no clue. None. All right. I know I'm off on a rant here, but this is very important. 216-901-0945. Joanne is in Twinsburg, wants to hit the EVs. Joanne, go right ahead.
Good morning, Bob. You know, I always tell you this, and we've talked about it before. You know, their plan to dispose of these batteries when they are no longer functional is to throw them into the oceans, which I can't understand how that's environmentally friendly. But I heard someone on Fox Business this morning talking about how he saw a Tesla on the side of the road being serviced. The service vehicle was a gas-powered Ford.
Of course it was.
Okay? I mean, if that tells you something.
I love that.
It's. I mean, they're ridiculous. I mean, but, you know, I mean, they want to throw the dead batteries in the ocean. What does that do for wildlife, for our waters? I mean, everything. I mean, they just make absolutely no sense going on with your... Where do they think the electricity comes from?
Yeah.
What do they think? They're crazy. They're just, I mean, I know as much about energy as Jennifer Granholm, okay?
Probably way more. Much. Probably way more. Yeah, no.
Well,
I mean,
probably not. But, you know, I mean, she don't know any more than I do. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought up the disposal, too, because the components, not just of these EVs, the batteries, but the components of the wind turbines as well, and the other things we're talking about here, they're not biodegradable. You can't just put them in a landfill and wait for a few decades to go by and they'll decompose, and that doesn't happen. They're not biodegradable. That means they're going to fill up the landfills. They can't be recycled either. It's almost impossible to take those materials and reuse them. So that means they're going to fill up landfills until the landfills are full, and then, like you said, then they start dumping them in the ocean because that's the bottomless pit where we can put all of
that's
our trash.
That's their master plan.
Yeah, and while telling us that we have to preserve our natural resources.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's bizarre.
Yeah, it is. Thank you, Joanne. I appreciate the phone call.
You.
You got it. Yeah, the EPA's new federal regulation here with the tailpipe emission. Is going to destroy the economic. And by the way, Biden actually, when he made this announcement yesterday, declared that this is going to be good for the United Auto Workers, declared that UAW is going to benefit from this because it's going to create a bunch of good union jobs building these EVs here. Did he not get the memo that we don't have the resources here and that the plan is for China, which controls the EV market, to build them there or in Mexico, not in the United States? Did he miss that memo? I'm telling you, what I described November as in the last few days, and I'm going to continue to make this my mantra here, is it's the Super Bowl of survival. We are now in a game in which the loser dies. If we lose in November, the nation dies. It's a survival game now. This isn't about whose ideology is going to be promoted more and who's going to, you know, and about the pronouns and this and that and the other. This isn't about just stuff that you feel like is maybe not all that ultra important. We are talking about survival. Speaking of those issues, by the way. EVs is one of them. The EV mandates is the 12 seed on the Biden bracket buster that I put up on my Facebook page yesterday, my Twitter page, and my Truth Social page. Find me there at those places, Always Right Radio or France Rants, and fill out your Biden bracket of the most destructive policies and issues we have in the country today. 16 seeds. EV mandates is number 12. Squaring off in this NCAA bracket format that I put together, squaring off against medical freedom and the freedom not to have to take government experimental shots in order to keep your jobs. Which is worse? Look at all 16 of those and fill out your bracket. Find it at Always Right Radio on Facebook and on France Rants on Twitter. We're back with Hour 3.
Tom.
This hour of Always Right Radio is brought to you by The Floor King and KeepingMedicareSimple.com.
You and I know
and do not believe that life is so dear and peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. If nothing in life is worth dying for, when did this begin? Just in the face of this enemy? Or should Moses have told the children of Israel to live in slavery under the Pharaohs? Should Christ have refused the cross? Should the patriots at Concord Bridge have thrown down their guns and refused to fire the shot heard round the world? The martyrs of history were not fools. And our honored dead, who gave their lives to stop the advance of the Nazis, didn't die in vain. Where then is the road to peace? Well, it's a simple answer after all. You and I have the courage to say to our enemies, there is a price we will not pay. There is a point beyond which they must not advance.
This is Always Right Radio with Bob France on AM 1420, The Answer.
All right, 7 minutes after 11 o'clock, and hour number three is underway on this Thursday, 21st morning of the third month, year of our Lord, 2024. So everybody knows who Kyle Rittenhouse is. If you don't, then you've been living in a cave with your eyes closed and your ears and your fingers singing la, 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 I don't want to hear it, for the last 4 years or so. Kyle Rittenhouse gave a speech yesterday, or was supposed to, got part of it done. Before he was essentially forced off the stage at the University of Memphis. By whom? By the same indoctrinated, race-baiting radicals who are probably going to be trying to do the same thing to him at Kent State coming up next month. Kyle Rittenhouse was confronted by radical students screaming things at him because of what Charlie Kirk said. Why? Because Turning Point USA founder and president Charlie Kirk is responsible for the organizations that are bringing Kyle Rittenhouse to various campuses to speak, including Kent State's next month. Last night, or yesterday, let's say it that way because the timeline is a little bit unclear, Kyle Rittenhouse departed the stage during the appearance after being confronted with comments by students, comments from founder and president of Turning Point USA, Charlie Kirk. Rittenhouse was invited by the chapter to speak on campus. The 21-year-old gained notoriety in August of 2020 when, at the age of 17, he shot and killed two men, as well as injuring a third at a protest in Kenosha, Wisconsin. Now, I'm going to point out this is a Newsweek-written article, so you're not going to have anything even remotely in context. He was gained notoriety when he was acquitted of all of those charges because they were all in self-defense as he was being attacked by Joseph Rosenbaum, Anthony Huber, and Gage Grosskreutz. So he was acquitted on all of those charges. Nonetheless, he is one of the top targets of the American left, and number one against those or from those who are against the Second Amendment, but also those who believe BLM and Antifa can do no wrong and that white people like Kyle Rittenhouse should just take their beatings to death in good stride. In video footage shared on Twitter yesterday, Rittenhouse was shown standing on stage at the University of Memphis as students shouted things at him about Charlie Kirk, saying, quote, Charlie Kirk has said a lot of racist things. Rittenhouse challenged, what racist things has Charlie Kirk said? We're going to have a bit of a dialogue here of what racist things that Charlie Kirk said. The student responded that Kirk said, we shouldn't celebrate Juneteenth. We shouldn't celebrate Martin Luther King Day. We should be working those days. He called Ketanji Brown Jackson an affirmative action hire. He said all this nonsense about George Floyd, and he said he'd be scared if a black pilot was on a plane. Does that not seem racist? Now I'm going to stop there and answer all of those. We should not have national holidays for all of these things, not all of these things. That does not mean Martin Luther King Day. Juneteenth was a new, recently invented one just to continue to advance the BLM cause in this country. It is divisive. It is not uniting. Number three, Ketanji Brown Jackson was an affirmative action hire. Don't take my word for it. Take that of Joe Biden, who literally said he was going to pick somebody based on race and sex, not in qualifications. And number four, George Floyd overdosed. Having said all of that, Charlie Kirk made those statements, not Kyle Rittenhouse. Why are these idiots asking Kyle Rittenhouse about it? Go to a Charlie Kirk event. He speaks at campuses, on campuses all over the country. Go ask him. Have this debate with him. Why make Kyle Rittenhouse answer those questions? So Kyle Rittenhouse said, I'm not going to comment on those things because he's here to talk about something else. They continued to harass him and hit him with a barrage of complaints and questions to the point where he walked off of the stage. After that, I've been watching this video all day long. I shouldn't say all day long. All morning long, multiple times. Videos of the BLM protesters carrying signs and screaming and hurling epithets at him, both leaving the building and once he and his security team got out to the parking garage, blocking the exit of the parking garage. Police had to step in to stop the mob from injuring not just Kyle Rittenhouse and his security team, but the attendees. Just those who came to hear him speak also hit with massive protests, harassment, people encroaching on their personal spaces. It was really literally only the security teams there that stopped this from turning into a massive, violent melee. So why am I focused so much about what happened in Memphis yesterday? Because, well, it is coming to Kent State next month. That's why.
This morning, Kent State faced major backlash after a student-run organization announced it was inviting Kyle Rittenhouse to speak on campus. If you remember, Rittenhouse was found not guilty on all charges for shooting and killing two men at a Black Lives Matter protest in Wisconsin in 2020. Right now, there is a petition on change.org asking Turning Point USA, the student organization putting on the event, to cancel Rittenhouse's appearance. We reached out to Kent State about the event, and they told News 5, quote, "As a state university, we permit groups and individuals to speak and share their views on our campus about topics they feel are important. As with any speaker invited to our campus, the university does not endorse or condone an opinion or point of view represented by the speaker."
All right. So thanks to a News 5 for that little report there. So that's what's coming next month. And joining us now to talk about the decision to bring Kyle in and whether or not it will still come off, given what happened in Memphis, is a representative of Turning Point USA at the Kent State chapter, Brady Seymour, a sophomore at Kent State. Brady, good morning. Thank you for coming on the air with us this morning. How are you?
Good. How are you? Thanks for having me on.
You got it. Huge props to you for your courage and for everybody else there at Turning Point USA for this very, very, I think, important event that you are hosting. They are trying to scare people into silence. They are trying to silence speakers like Kyle Rittenhouse, who have a very important story to tell. And you guys are going out on a limb here to bring him to Kent State University. So first of all, props and kudos to you. Second of all, tell me how this thing came about.
Well, before the semester, we were just getting off of hosting Yanmi Park on campus, and that was a good event.
Mm-hmm.
Everything went according to plan, and so I was gearing up to get ready, preparing for the next semester. And so we were just looking at our options. We had some names in mind, but they were a little too expensive for us.
Mm-hmm.
But we ended up landing Kyle Rittenhouse, thankfully, and he's been very gracious and very flexible with his prices. So it's been a good process with him, and he's worked pretty easily with us.
Who pays Kyle or any of the speakers that you bring on?
Turning Point usually pays them, but if it's someone that isn't in contract with Turning Point, we have to find the funding ourselves through grants from Turning Point or other conservative groups or even the school. We also ask for donations at different kind of meetings across Ohio.
Okay. All right. That makes perfect sense. Tell me how and why you got involved with Turning Point in the first place.
Well, I've been interested in politics since 2016. A family friend of mine told me about Turning Point, and it just kind of sparked my interest. I watched some Charlie Kirk videos on YouTube when I was younger, and that just kind of, I realized there was one on campus, and I messaged the account, and I've been in it ever since.
How big's your chapter? How many people are a part of it?
There are four people right now on our board, but they're hardworking, so we get a lot done, and I think for as small as a group we are, we get a lot more done than most other groups on campus.
So, are there four members or just four board members?
Just four board members, which are we mainly do all the work, and everyone else is just you know, if they're able to, they'll help every once in a while. But
it's really I'm just kind of curious. I mean, Kent State is not exactly known as a a moderate campus. It's got a reputation as being one of the more left-wing campuses in the country, quite frankly. So I'm curious how many students are willing to identify themselves, even if they're not on your board, but just as being part of Turning Point USA at Kent State.
Not a lot. We do street interviews with people, and you'll ask them questions, and we want their gut reaction, and so they'll give us like a more conservative answer if we explain the full context. Mm-hmm. But then when we like try and push further, they'll freeze up because they don't want to get canceled by the students. So it's very interesting how many actually are conservative and are just afraid to get backlash.
Afraid to say it. Yeah, that's the reason I'm asking how many are willing to identify themselves as being with Turning Point, because you're right. Cancellation is real. Being harassed, being ostracized, being targeted is a legitimate thing, which is why I give you kudos and props at the beginning of this conversation, because you have guts. You are willing to do this on a campus. Not that Kent State is, you know, unique, because there are a lot of very, very left-wing campuses. In fact, it's overwhelming in terms of faculty representation who identify as liberals or progressives, certainly students and student groups as well. It's overwhelming. So you had the guts to join Turning Point USA, and now you're actually the leader of the chapter there, and you're bringing in somebody named Kyle Rittenhouse. What has your life been like since then?
Just a lot of work, you know. I've been trying to build this chapter up, and you know, it's my passion is politics. So I'm gracious for the opportunity to put in all this work to get to host Kyle. And I think I've gotten closer with the people that I consider friends, because I am able to be who I am and I'm not hiding any of my opinions. So the people that I am close with, I have never been closer to people than before. You know,
I'm so glad I've had
more friends in the past. Yeah, I've had more people I consider friends in the past, but they weren't as close as I am with the people now. So my group is small, but we're a tight-knit group, so I'm very happy.
Good for you, Brady. We're talking with Brady Seymour. He is a sophomore at Kent State. He is the president of the very small but unified Turning Point USA chapter that's bringing Kyle Rittenhouse to speak next month. What about your enemies? And what I mean by that is, do you face harassment when you go into student unions, you go into public events or anything else? Do you broadcast that you are Turning Point USA, wear the T-shirt, that kind of thing? And do you face any of the type of things that are typically associated with what progressives do to conservatives?
I wear the T-shirts. I have a Turning Point merchandise that I wear. And I don't really face backlash on campus. My face is all over the Instagram account. They should know who I am at this point, considering they're trying to get my group banned from campus. But no one said anything to me in person besides the occasional drive-by insult, and they'll scurry off. But, you know, I don't really blame them, because, I mean, if their points are baseless, so I wouldn't want to argue off a baseless comment.
Good for you. You can call them baseless and be right about that, but you can go ahead and blame them too, because they are very much blamable for what they're doing. An example of that is what happened in Memphis. So I just introduced you by telling everybody what happened at the University of Memphis. Does this give you any pause? And first of all, what is the date? What is the date next month that Kyle is supposed to speak?
April 16th at 6 p.m.
16th. Okay. So I don't know how many other places he has visited recently, but I just know that this one just happened. And like I said, the Black Lives Matter and other left-wing progressive groups came out there and tried to pin the attendees down to not let them leave, harassing them. It took security to get Kyle out of there. And so when you see all of this stuff happening, Brady, does it give you pause as to whether or not you want to go through with this thing on the 16th?
No, not at all. I've been working with the Kent police and trying to get in contact with Kyle's security team to make sure it is completely safe for everybody. The school put out a notice yesterday that they will stand with the group to uphold freedom of speech, and they will make sure that anyone who is obstructing that will be punished properly. So I have backing from the school and my family members, and you know, considering that I actually am going to have family there attending, I'm going to make sure that it is completely safe and for everybody, not just for my side or the liberal side. I'm going to make sure that everyone is safe and nothing bad should happen.
How big is the venue that he's going to speak in, Brady?
The room can fit 410 people.
Okay, and are there tickets that are being distributed for that? I'm assuming there's not being charged, but
yeah.
Are there tickets? Do you have to have a ticket to get in?
Yeah, they can sign up for an RSVP link, and they'll have to show it when they enter.
Is it students only, or can members of the general public attend?
Members of the general public can come, too.
Okay, and when do those tickets go on sale or become available?
They went available when I made the announcement last Thursday.
Oh, so they're available right now. So, okay. The reason I'm asking is I'm trying to figure out exactly how I would be able to make it work, because I would like to bring myself and, I don't know, a couple hundred of my listeners to come and show support for you and for Kyle, and so that his voice can be heard rather than being shouted down the way he was in Memphis and forced to leave the stage. So it's no problem if people who are listening to me right now and who want to, encourage the dialogue. And that's all you guys are doing. I want to make that clear. Turning Point is not about trying to provoke protests or provoke fights. It's to engage one another in dialogue, thought-provoking discussions on matters that are of great importance to all of us. And that's all you guys are trying to host, right?
Right.
So the method that I would go to try to bring myself and as many people listening to us right now who would like to come and attend is to go to where do we go? Can you send me a link that I can then share with other people, or how do I get there?
Yeah, I can send you a link, or if you want, you can, it's in the link in our bio on our Instagram account at Kent State_TPUSA. It's a Google form. Just fill out your name, email, and phone number and a few other things, and you should be good to go.
Yeah, you guys need to find another format than Google, by the way.
Yeah.
I don't understand that. And I'll have to ask Charlie about that, too. Google does not support Kyle Rittenhouse whatsoever. They oppose him.
No.
They hate him. They see him as a murderer, just like all of those idiots who were screaming at Memphis do, too. So let's not use Google, but I understand we'll use it if that's what you have in place right now. So when you saw, did you see the events yesterday in Memphis, the things that I played and described a few minutes ago?
Yeah, I did see a few videos.
So he walked off the stage as the questioners continued to shout and wouldn't let him speak. I don't know what to make of that. At the end, he seemed fine. He posted a couple of video reaction things on Twitter afterwards. You know, hey, we made it out safely and everything is good. But the event didn't get to come off, or he didn't get to be completed anyway. Are you worried about that?
A tiny bit, not much. The school has come out and said in an email to all the students that if there is any kind of obstruction to freedom of speech and people enjoying this event, then actions will be taken to punish them. So I have backing from the school, and the school is not going to back down. They haven't backed down in the past. So,
and are they planning on providing the security, or is that private?
Yeah, I have the Kent police have contacted me for security for this event, as well as Kyle's team.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you what, Brady, I'm really serious when I say this. I want to be a part of this, and I know I have a very, very large audience of people who are active as well and that would like to come and show support for you, so show support for Turning Point, show support for Kyle, and make sure that the voices of everyone can be heard. But most particularly the speaker, not being shouted down by some of the other individuals there. So we want to show as much support as we can. So I'm going to reach out to you again off the air. I want to make sure that we can get the right way to get involved in this. And also, do you know if is Kyle, in working with Turning Point, would he be available to come on the radio before that appearance so that we could talk to him and kind of, and really kind of get the lay of the land in terms of what he's going to talk about and why people need to let him do it?
That's something I can certainly reach out and ask him if he's willing to do that. But
okay.
Yeah, I'll let
So you haven't had any like promotional conversations of the event. It's just pretty much Kyle shows up on the day of, comes in, gives his speech, and then departs.
Yeah.
Okay.
We've been promoting it on campus on our own, but
no, I know on your own. I mean Kyle. There's not like an agreement about promotional things with Kyle himself. That's what I mean.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you what. I'm going to put you on hold here, Brady, because I want to talk a little bit more about that. I want to be a part of this thing as much as I can. I want people to know. I do. What, basically, if it's a 400-seat venue, which is the reason I asked, I don't want 390 of them to be rabid left-wing progressives. They're screaming at him and calling him a murderer and a racist. I want there to be a good balance of people in that crowd so that he actually has an opportunity to be heard. So I want to try to help with that in any way that I can. So Brady, what I want to do is put you on hold. Don't hang up here. Mm-hmm. I want to get that information. You can give it to, I think Chris is answering the phones this morning. Give it to Chris so that we can get the link out to as many people as we can to come out there and support this. Thank you, young man, for your courage. Do you know what you're going to do when you graduate? Do you plan on running for office? Do you plan on getting involved in the political game in some way?
Yeah, I would love to get involved into politics sometime.
Not sure in what capacity yet?
Yeah, okay. Just anything, really.
You're young. You're a sophomore. You don't have to have it figured out yet. Good for you that you have a goal and you have a path in mind, wherever that path may lead. I'm impressed by that, and I'm really impressed by the fact that you are courageous enough to run Turning Point USA at a campus like Kent State University and to bring in a speaker like Kyle. So, Brady, congratulations to you. There's a lot of work left to be done, but I want to be I want to help support you in as much in as many ways as we possibly can. So hold the line here, and we'll get set up, okay?
All right, appreciate it.
Thank you, Brady. Brady Seymour, sophomore at Kent State University. Young conservatives on campuses like Kent State, they're like unicorns. I mean, they're almost non-existent. You have to hunt them down. This guy is out there saying, I'm here, and I'm wearing the Turning Point USA shirt, and I'm bringing Kyle Rittenhouse to campus. What of it? That's awesome. That's gutsy. That's ballsy, if I may say so. And I want to support that the best I can, and I hope a whole bunch of people listening to me right now feel the same way. We'll be
the answer.
Hey, guys. So we just got back from Memphis University. I'm with Byron, who's helping me with my security today. Huge shout out to him and his team and Odin, K9 Odin. It was quite interesting watching the videos and seeing some of the articles from the media saying that I got there at 4 o'clock. And
we're wizards.
Exactly. What were it's we crazy. Doing sitting at a Bass Pro Shops at 4 o'clock?
We're at Bass Pro at 4 o'clock.
But anyways, great event, and I think it's funny that a lot of the media is saying we got booed off stage. In reality, we did a hard cutoff time and just happened to leave at that. Great event, interesting people to say the least, and both dogs, Milo and Odin, did a great job working together.
Absolutely, they did.
Absolutely. Be sure to check out BTS K9 if you want a dog like Milo or Odin.
I want to say something about Kyle Rittenhouse there. That was his video afterwards, trying to clarify things that went on. He said he did not leave stage early. He did not get booed off it. He left when he left because it was the hard out. No matter what the questions were, that was when he was done. So, okay, I hope that's correct. He's 21. Okay? He's 21. And you might say, so? Well, he's an adult. Yeah, he is. You know, he's a grown-ass man, as the phrase goes, but he's not. He's 21. I have a 20-year-old, and I'm trying to picture my 20-year-old son speaking before hundreds of people at a university after having the experience, by the way, that Kyle Rittenhouse had. I cannot even imagine that, but just to command a room. And then to have that room start screaming at you and trying to make you answer questions about something somebody else said that is not your own lived experience, and that's not your own quotes, it's not your own mind, the way that, you know, with all of the threats and the screams of murderer and everything else, that I cannot imagine my 20-year-old son going, you know, being able to handle that. I can't imagine many 20 or 21-year-olds. Quite honestly, you know, we say that age 18 makes you an adult because that's when you can vote and that's when you can buy a gun and that's when you can, well, you can't drink, but that's when you can go to war and so on and so forth. We say that that's an adult, but I mean, do any of us believe our 18-year-olds are real adults? Do any of us believe our 18 and our 19 or 20-year-olds still aren't kids? Because they are, largely. That doesn't mean they shouldn't be held accountable for adult actions like crimes. They should be held accountable as adults for those kinds of things. But generally speaking, again, what do science and, you know, neurologists tell us? That the average male brain doesn't reach full development until age 26, I think it is, or 27. So, in other words, this kid is still a kid. He's 21, and he's been thrust in the national spotlight by what happened to him when he was 17, 4 years ago, when the riots that destroyed this country, cities across the country, the BLM racist riots, the Antifa riots, and everything else that hit because George Floyd overdosed in 2020, around Memorial Day of 2020 up in Minneapolis. He goes there to Kenosha. You know the story by now. He goes there to Kenosha and is starting to clean off the spray paint of buildings that were being targeted, trying to help people that he knew because he was, what, about a half an hour away or so from Kenosha where he lived. He had friends there. He goes there armed to protect himself. Thank God, or else he'd be dead right now. But, he's trying to help the situation. He gets targeted by Antifa progressive radical thugs who start attacking him, literally, physically with a skateboard, and then chasing him to finish the beating when he stops, falls, rolls, turns over, and fires to defend himself. He was hit with every charge they could think of. First-degree intentional homicide, first-degree reckless homicide, two charges of first-degree reckless endangerment. They wanted to lock him up so bad they could taste it. But the jury watched it all, because it was all on video. And they heard the testimony, and they found out who the scumbag child pedophile, one of them was, Joseph Rosenbaum. They found out who these quote-unquote victims were who were attacking him. And the truth came out, and Kyle Rittenhouse was acquitted of all charges. He was 17, truly still a kid. And he's been under the white-hot spotlight of the media and the radical left, targeted for cancellation ever since. He's tried to get jobs. Nobody will hire him. Why? Because of what I just said. He's targeted for cancellation. Anybody who employs him is also going to face harassment and be targeted for boycotts and cancellation. So he's out there trying to make a living. One of the ways he can do that is to accept speaking fees to talk about his experiences at college campuses through Turning Point USA. This is a guy trying to just make a living and do his job. He's been hit with something that no one deserves to be hit with. He's 21. I give this guy so much credit. I give him so much leeway, by the way, for anything that happens on stage, any breakdown that might happen, we're talking about a guy who's going to have PTSD for the rest of his life because of what he endured and because of what he had to do to save his own life. I give him all the credit in the world. I give credit to Kent State for allowing Kyle Rittenhouse to speak. I give credit to Brady and the kids who will make up the small chapter of Turning Point USA at Kent State, and I'm going to be there on April 16th. I am going to be there, and my question is who's going with me? And we can carpool. We can meet together near the downtown or something, or where we can find a place to gather, to rally together, and to go together to peacefully and patriotically listen to a young man speak. And that's all. And that's all. I'm going to be a part of it. I made that decision as soon as I found out he was coming. And now that I've talked to the sophomore chapter leader there at Kent State, I'm even more convinced I want to be there to try to provide some balance to what is going to be an overwhelmingly aggressive, progressive crowd. I want to try to provide some balance, some support, and some cheers for Kyle Rittenhouse when he speaks. So I hope you're going to join me in that effort. I'm going to share it on my social media. I'll give you a link on how we can get the tickets and everything else as quickly as I can. Okay, Derek, you're on AM 1420, The Answer. Derek, thanks for waiting. Go right ahead.
Hey, morning, Bob. Thank you. Yeah, out-of-town arsonist going into Kenosha back then to burn the place down and burn down a car lot. Those are peaceful protesters. And but you know who Kent State will, you know, has had a welcome with open arms as a guest before? Another lovely person, Bill Ayers, you know, the former leader of the Weather Underground.
Yep, exactly,
yeah,
right.
Yeah, he's fine for him to be there. And what were some of the things they were charged with back in the 70s? Bombing?
But why? Because to protest the Vietnam War and again the evil capitalists. And but it's amazing. And what got them? And what got them off when they finally were going to be charged for their crime? Because the FBI wiretapped them. The evil Constitution and the Fourth Amendment actually saved those. The Weather Underground actually saved them. The country they're trying to destroy. They were able to do that and not face any prison time. And Bill Ayers became what? A tenured Chicago University professor. And who else? Obama's buddy. Right.
Yeah, exactly right on every front. And that's the reason why, like I said, I'm a little bit surprised that there's even enough courage to do this. I mean, first of all, any college campus. I mean, I wouldn't feel any different about how it would be done at Kent State or at Ohio State or at OU or Toledo or Bowling Green or anywhere else in the other state schools. But Kent State has a different, reputation because of what you just said, but also because of, what happened with, the students who were killed by the National Guard. It's been a progressive hotbed, kind of the Berkeley of the Midwest, for a very, very long time. So for them to have, for these kids to bring him to Kent State as opposed to any of those other state universities here, I just think it's courageous. And I'm impressed that Kent State is issuing a statement against those who are calling for this to be canceled, saying, nope, we do support free speech here. So I'm very interested to see how this whole thing turns up. But I'm very, very impressed by the young man and the young people who are putting it together.
Absolutely. And just to mention, because I know we're a little bit away from May 4th, from the Kent State, the infamous shooting, mm-hmm. the National Guard. But that's another way that, it took me a long time to really understand that, how that was more of a revisionist history. Of course, they leave out that what led up to that? Riots, burning down the ROTC building by the peaceful, protesting anti-war students at the time. They never talk about any of that.
No.
They never talk about throwing things, rocks or whatever, at the National Guard, provoking them. That's never mentioned. They were just peaceful, unarmed protesters, of course.
That's exactly right. Well, listen, I'm glad you called, Derek. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. You going to be there with us? All right, Derek's gone. I want to find out. I want to know who's going. I want you to call us. I want you, and I know the show's almost over, but I want you to call us. I want you to email. I want you to text. I want you to Facebook comment. I want to know who's going. I'll put the question up there. Who's going with me to Kent State on April 16th? I'll make that a pinned post on my Always Right Radio Facebook page. Who's going with me on April 16th to hear Kyle Rittenhouse at Kent State? And I want everybody who's going to be there to comment and let me know. And I will share the link to make sure that we can all get our tickets. All right. Joe is in Westlake. Hi, Joe.
Good morning, Bob. You know I'm going. I look forward to it. I'd like to ask an important question. It's
sure.
very clear that this EV mandate will cause a total disaster. Why on earth would they do that? Why? Because the Democrats have been looking to regulate energy not only as a means of power, but also as part of the strategy to control the money supply. Oil is behind the strength of the U.S. dollar. And if there is free trade in oil, that reduces the ability of the government to print.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.